Thank you, everybody. My name is Jim Larson. I'm a professor at the Department of Ag and Resource Economics at the University of Tennessee. And I want to acknowledge my two co-authors on this who helped put together the presentation, Margarita Valendia and Mike Bushmuller. And my task, my task is to try and give a little bit of background in how we as economists think about making decisions for precision farming applications. And so I thought I'd back up and first talk a little bit about what's the process in doing precision agriculture. And to just give a very general definition of it, it's simply managing farm fields spatially rather than on a whole field basis. And so we're gathering more information to help us make decisions that are dependent on what we see in the field. And so a key part of economics of precision ag is, what do we do with that information and how do we handle it? How do we get it in a form to make decisions? And so if you think about it, it's basically a three-step process. You know, the information gathering part, which we're often using electronic monitoring technology to gather that information about the field. Then we have to take that big mass of information, put it in a form that makes it useful for decision making. We typically do that with some kind of geographic information system and computers. And then once we've got it in the form, do an analysis and then make a decision, are we or are we not going to do precision ag for a particular input or set of inputs on a field using variable rate technology. And I'll probably get some arguments from people about this because technologies are often hard to define, but I thought it'd be useful to just kind of list two ways that we can think about this: map-based technologies, you know, where we use a computer to generate a map, then the map is entered into a card and we place it in the variable rate controller. And then the other way is kind of a sensor-based, you know, like a weed seeker that goes through the field, senses a weed is there, and then we spray it. And it's done instantaneously, so the information is immediately applied. So it's kind of more of a black box approach where everything is done automatically compared to an approach where you go through specific steps in an analysis. And it kind of gets to this point that information is really an input, just like seed or fertilizer or chemicals. And once we think about information as an input, we can use basic budgeting principles to evaluate what the additional value is of that information in terms of dollars in a farm operation. And typically, information only has value if decisions are made with it or decisions are changed. So I'm an economist, so I have to put up, you know, at least one equation here. But try to make it simple just to get the point across. We think of a decision in terms of profit. And profit is made up of two parts, the revenue that's associated with it and then the cost that's associated with it. And that triangle there, or delta, represents the change that we have in each one of those things. So, you know, we're looking at the change in profit is equal to our change in revenue, and we'll talk a little bit about what that is, and then the minus our changes in costs with that decision. So the first step typically is we find, you know, what the changes in revenue are due to precision ag. Then we're going to subtract out our cost of information analysis and implementation in that. And in the process, because it's a partial budgeting thing, we're going to ignore all other revenues and costs that do not change with the decision. So if we're doing variable rate nitrogen, we're not going to think about you know, what happens to herbicides or other things. We're only concerned about what happens to nitrogen costs and how that impacts yields. And then another important aspect of this is what's called break-even analysis and sensitivity analysis. And I could, you know, have a graduate course in how to do this, but the basic idea behind this is we're trying to determine under what conditions will the technology or practice be profitable. So if we're thinking about variable rate technology, say for nitrogen, we're, say, concerned about under what prices, say what cotton lint price, would it be profitable to do this technology, assuming that nitrogen prices stay the same and we have some yield change and we have some nitrogen cost change. And so we can find where it's profitable, what lint price it's profitable at, and we also can find what price is not profitable at and identify that break-even point where, you know, above it it's profitable and below it it's not. And so what we've done is we've given some value to that information and made it more useful for decision making. If we know that we have a certain set of prices, the practice is profitable. If we have another set of prices, it's not profitable. And so it's very helpful to think of it in those terms. What are some sources of cost changes? Well, you have to handle a lot more data, and you have to learn how to use that information or put it in a form that's useful as information. So you have analysis costs. You also have additional ownership costs for equipment, software, whatever else that you have to have, maybe consultant fees and so on. You also perhaps have more custom variable rate application fees. And then you're going to have changes in inputs. It may raise how much seed, fertilizer, and chemicals you put on overall in the field, or it may reduce it. It also affects other things such as fuel, labor, machinery costs, and so on. And it also affects human resource costs because you have to invest more in your knowledge of precision farming in order to implement it. Another thing to consider in the analysis of precision ag stuff is time. A lot of decisions have a time element to it. And so, for example, if we're doing grid soil sampling, it has a value of more than 1 year, over more than 1 year. So it becomes a durable asset, and so you need to amortize it over time. So it'd be more correct to amortize that than to take all the costs in 1 year and then try and determine whether it's profitable to do variable rate fertilizer with it. You need to amortize it. You have a lower threshold for it to be profitable. You also have human capital costs, such as workshops, as this, conferences, and other things that result in downtime from doing other things. And so you have to evaluate, you know, what's the more valuable use of your time, learning this stuff, or can you be doing something else that's more valuable? Some of the sources of revenue changes that are involved with this include increased yields. That's one of the easier ones to think about. But you also could have improved quality, but if you're thinking about it in a partial budgeting framework, if you reduce input use by going to variable rate compared to whole field application, we think of that cost savings as cash inflow from that, and so that then becomes a revenue that we can think about. As Mike Buschermull mentioned earlier, some technologies such as automatic section control, you can reduce machinery and labor time by being able to go over an acre faster than you would without it. And so you can capture that cost savings in terms of operating and ownership costs of the equipment and the labor. Given certain types of sensing information, you may be able to better determine when you're harvesting, so you can do a better job of marketing. It might result in higher prices. So that's another potential value in site-specific data. And then access to markets requiring documentation of input use, as we heard in the previous discussion, that can have value. It can allow you to do things that you might not otherwise be able to do. And so that's also part of the potential revenue that you have to consider when evaluating precision farming technology. I know we had a previous presentation on on-farm stuff, and I thought I was going to mention a little bit about that. I will not say much more than you know, when you're considering doing such things, the cost of that in terms of time and money have to be balanced with what the potential benefits are, as you do with any part of the decision-making process. There are a number of decision aids out there for evaluating investment in precision farming. They're usually based on partial budgeting analysis and the sensitivity and break-even analysis concepts. I'm going to talk about two that are available on the web for the University of Tennessee Department of Agriculture and Resource Economics. One that's for a very specific decision, the automatic section control for planters cost calculator, and another that's a more general model that's focused on fertilizer and chemical inputs, the Cotton Precision Agriculture Investment Decision Aid. This is a web shot of the automatic section control for planter cost calculation calculator. It was developed by Margarita Valenia and Mike Bushermull. If you simply go to economics.ag.utk.edu and look under decision tools, you'll find the calculator there. It's a very simple but very informative Excel-based decision tool that takes you through different kinds of scenarios as far as what kind of field size and shapes you have, and then using that to compare what kind of cost savings you can get in terms of seed for cotton and also for soybeans and corn. And I think has a very quick and easy way to try and figure out whether or not automatic section control can pay for planters. The SEPEDA model is also available at economics.ag.utk.edu, and it's also available on the Cotton Incorporated website under Agriculture and Economics. And it's a more comprehensive model in terms of the decisions that you can look at, but also is fairly simple to use in terms of getting kind of a break-even and sensitivity analysis to find where it might be profitable or not profitable to invest in a particular precision farming technology. And so what I'd like to do for the rest of the presentation is talk about a couple case studies. The first one is with the planter automatic section control calculator. And so we're going to look at several different kinds of scenarios. The first scenario is different cotton enterprise sizes varying from 1,000 up to 2,000 acres. And then we're going to look at the impact of farm size and then, you know, being able to spread the cost of the technology over more than one crop. And then third, we're going to look at the impact that field shape and size has on the decision. And a very neat aspect of this decision tool by Margarita and Mike is that they've categorized the complexity of fields into three different categories. What they call the low double planted cost area, a moderate double planted cost area, and a high double planted cost area. And basically you can see from the example field shapes there that the field size and complexity of the field in terms of its border gets greater as we go to higher cost situations. And so in the decision aid, you can enter different proportions that might fit your farm. For example, you know, if the majority is in low-cost double planet fields, as in the first example there, 60, 25, 15. Or if you have a high cost, which a majority of the land is in high cost double planet area, with the balance being in low or moderate. And so it's a very easy way to enter that in and kind of see under what conditions, by varying those proportions, it might be profitable for you. And if you think your farm fits within those conditions. So if we look at here for our three example cut enterprises sizes of 1,000, 1,500, and 2,000 acres, and for our three different kind of field complexity scenarios, you can see that the potential savings associated with automatic section control go up with cotton enterprise size, but also field complexity. And so you see for the 2,000 acre farm, you know, if we have the majority of the land in low double planet cost area, and we go from that to a majority of it being in high double cost area, you can see that the cost savings more than double. How does that impact the potential payback of the technology? Again, if we're looking at two scenarios, 1,000 cotton acres and 2,000 cotton acres, you can see savings on the left-hand axis and then the payback in years. And basically the way I think they have it calculated is, you know, provides a positive cash flow above principal and interest costs on the technology. And so if we look at a low double planet situation on the left-hand side, you can see for the 1,000-acre farm, it takes 6 years to have a payback on it. And so, you know, you can decide, is that too long for me to wait to have a payback? Would you rather have, you know, less than 5 years, 3 years, or whatever? But then if you look at the same 1,000-acre farm where the majority of land is in more high double planet cost area, then the payback period is a lot lower. It's 2 years. And if we look at the 2,000-acre cotton enterprise, you can see that the payback is lower, getting down to about 1 year for the high double planting cost scenario. And it just seems to me when you're getting down to a year or less, the payback to technology pretty much becomes a no-brainer that it's worth investing in that technology. And so the tool can help you to determine, you know, what kind of payback you need to have. If we take another scenario where we're looking at automatic section control for different crop mix sizes and double planted area scenarios here, say looking first at corn, and right here we're looking at a high double planted crop area scenario, you can see that we have a pretty rapid payback of about 2 years. If we add more area and we diversify the crop with either soybeans or cotton, we can get the payback down to about 1 year. So, you know, if you have a fairly complex high double crop cost area, it becomes pretty much a no-brainer that the technology will pay for you. And then the second case scenario, using the CEPEDA model, or the Cotton Precision Ag Investment Decision Aid, we're going to look at sprayer automatic guidance and boom control. Again, we define our farms a little bit differently, but you know, we have three farm situations. About two-thirds of it is in cotton. The other third is in other crops. And we've got approximately a 1,000-acre farm, 2,000-acre farm, and 4,000-acre farm. And so we're going to look at different kind of reduction in sprayer over application scenarios, going from 1% up to 20% based on data for some irregularly shaped fields in Kentucky, which where they did a spray study that Mike talked about earlier, and has a lot of the same kind of field characteristics that we see in Tennessee. And this is a little bit different way to look at data. Field size is on the x-axis. Reduction in sprayer over application is on the y-axis. And you can see that there's kind of a log linear relationship. As we get larger field sizes, we have lower over application. But you also can see that there's a lot of noise there, and that's related to the complexity of the field shape. If it's more irregular, the more variability you're going to see from that. So what we did is just vary within SPEDA that 1% overlap savings to the 20% overlap savings, and then look at, you know, how this would affect the payback. And so the situation that we have here is typical for Tennessee. We've got 8 sprayer operations, you know, for herbicides, growth regulators, and harvest aids, and pesticides, and the costs that are associated with that. And in SPEDA, it just gives you kind of a nice summary. And this is a similar kind of example to one of the scenarios that we looked at. And there are 2 lines that you see there in that chart. And that's the cash inflows, which are in black, and then the cash outflows. And then you look at the cumulative amounts that occur over time, and there's a point that they cross. And so that's the point where you covered all the cash outflow costs, and you're now getting net cash flows above it. And so you have a positive a return on the investment. And so in this case, it looks like it takes about 7 years to reach that point. So a farmer as a decision maker can look at that and try and decide, is that too long to wait for that? Or do I need to have a more rapid payback? Do I need it to be in 3 years or 5 years or whatever it is? And in the decision tool, there are tabs where you can do, you know, change things and see what happens. And that's where we get at this break-even sensitivity. You know, what if I get more savings than I thought I was? How would that impact? If I were to get less savings, how would that impact it? And so, you know, it becomes a useful kind of what-if method to evaluate, you know, whether or not you should invest. Because, you know, in the real world, you know, we don't have perfect information. And so, you know, we're trying to find out, you know, where is it going to pay? And if we know that our situation kind of falls within that range, then we're more confident in making that investment than if it doesn't fall within that range. So here's a summary that I did of analysis out of SPEDA. Again, on the x-axis, we got the reduction in sprayer application rate going from 1% up to 20%, and then the break-even time to investment so that it pays on the y-axis. For our 3 farm sizes varying from 1,000, 2,000, and 4,000 acres. And say you say, I'm not going to accept the investment unless I have a payback that's 5 years or less. And so for that smaller 1,000-acre farm, they would have to have a reduction in sprayer over application of about 10% on average on that farm for them to make the investment. Whereas if we're looking at the 2,000-acre farm, it's going to be less than 5% over application that they have to save. And then for the 4,000-acre farm, it's about 2%. So, you know, how many acres you can spread this technology over in terms of how many passes you have to make and farm size make a big difference in whether or not it's worth investing in the technology. And then the other thing that makes a big difference is, you know, what kind of complexity and fields do you have. As Mike mentioned, if you're west of the Mississippi, got fairly square fields, the payback is going to be a lot more difficult than if you're east of the Mississippi River, where we have a lot more irregular fields. So with that, I think the basic take-home message of site-specific technology or precision ag technology is that the benefits of it and the costs of it are site-specific. It really does depend on the crop, you know, the value of that crop. It depends on the input, how expensive that input is, what kind of field characteristics are you looking at in terms of that decision. So like if it's automatic section control, it's the complexity and size of your fields. If it's variable rate, say nitrogen, it might be, you know, how variable is the soil throughout that field that might determine that. And then also farm size and, you know, how many operations you can spread this technology cost over are the driving factors. So with automatic section control, it really does depend on field size and geometry. A larger farm with more operations on, may potentially make the technology more profitable. And so that's the kind of balance that you have to kind of take into account in evaluating the technology and seeing whether it fits your situation. And with that, I'll try and answer any questions.
We got about 3.5 minutes, so we got a little bit of time for questions if anybody has any. George?
I enjoyed your presentation, and my question is, for these longer payback periods, does this decision tool have built-in repair and maintenance of the equipment, and how do you calculate that?
Yeah, there is a kind of an expected repair and maintenance depending on the type of equipment that it is. And it also depends on what the potential useful life of the equipment is, and you can vary that. You know, with a lot of electronic technologies, the useful life is typically shorter because of obsolescence and other issues, and so you have to take that into account.
Thank you.
Yes?
Did you factor in payments to growers from the 595P precision management plan?
I'm sorry?
Did you factor in payments under the EQIP program?
No, there are no payments in here. And that also could be a factor if there are incentives for doing that. But no, we did not. And the effect of that would be to reduce investment costs and potentially make it more profitable in more situations.
If there aren't any more questions, I think we still have a few. About half of our experts and speakers today are still in the room. We're supposed to open for discussion starting around 5:30, so welcome to stay for a little while if you want and ask. Randy Taylor's there, Mike Bushermall, Dr. Larson, George Valitas, a couple more tonight.
Another question the gentleman asked over there a while ago is, were you cutting back on the example of Moore Gibson put up there, cutting back on the nitrogen, phosphorus, or potash, or whatever? Is that soil, you're depleting the soil somewhat, possibly, so do you need to do grid sampling
every year? So to the speakers back there, and I know Lori's not in here, but the question's brought back up about the soil depletion. If you're cutting back on your nutrients, do y'all have any anything you want to add about, you know, basically, I get the original question was, I think it was asked by you, to be honest, is, she showed a two-year period. If we go farther than that, should we try to soil sample more often to make sure that we're not depleting our nutrients too quickly in the soil? Is 3 years good? Basically, what do y'all have any input on that? This is what he's asking pretty much. We want to go a little more in depth and see if we've got, what your opinions or facts or whatever are on that.
Most of our growers